Welcome, everyone, to episode 140 of the NBA podcast. It's time for another edition of Bye Felicia. We got to say goodbye to the teams that got knocked out in the conference semifinals. That includes the Toronto Raptors, Philadelphia 76ers, New Orleans Pelicans, and Utah Jazz. So we will talk about all of their big offseason questions and what to expect from them this summer. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well. I just realized right now, because I had completely forgotten about it, and because we're going to talk about the Raptors here now, that Malachi Richardson was a Raptor.
He is indeed a Raptor.
Yeah.
Yeah, they traded him. I know, I forgot about it too. I wrote something about kind of the Raptors' outlook, and then totally forgot he was on the team, but they traded Bruno Caboclo,
who is now here.
He was 2 years away from being away. He is now 0 years away. He's arrived. He's arrived in the NBA.
So for next season, I presume.
Right. Yeah. But now I believe his contract is expired and he's in Sacramento. So purgatory upon purgatory.
Well, either way, someone will sign him for next season and he's gonna break out.
Yeah,
obviously.
That's true. Because, yeah. MVP type season coming from Bruno. But yes.
By the way, for those out there, if you go to Bruno's page on Basketball Reference and you go down to the transaction tab and look at the amount of times he's been assigned and recalled from the Raptors 905, you're going to be scrolling for a long while, and that's fun.
Indeed. So let's start with the Raptors. We discussed Dwayne Casey and his firing and whether that was deserved a lot in last episode, so we're not going to touch on that too much here. Go back, listen to episode 139. We devoted the first 15 minutes or so to the Raptors. We do need to talk about their options moving forward. It looks like Mike Budenholzer, if he isn't the heavy favorite, he's at least appears to be one of the front runners for this job. Mark Stein of the New York Times, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. Like, Woj tweeted that Casey had been fired, and literally, like, within 8 minutes, Kevin O'Connor was like, look out for Mike Budenholzer in the Raptors. So, you know, it seems like Casey, or Masai Ujiri, their team president, he's not going to fire the coach of a 59-win team unless he knows exactly who he wants, I would assume, and, like, knows he can get that guy. So I'm guessing Budenholzer is going to get that job, and it's going to happen pretty quickly. If he does, there was a meme going on Twitter throughout all of Friday, and it was, you know, the Spider-Man meme, which, side note, like, no one outside of basketball Twitter knows that meme, apparently. Like, I was discussing it with people, and they were like, what the fuck are you talking about, Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man? I'm like, you guys, it's really funny. It's when two people, they're the same. Okay. So there was a lot of using that Spider-Man meme with Dwayne Casey and Mike Budenholzer saying, like, this is them discussing strategies to beat LeBron James in the playoffs, because Bud, you know, when he was with the Hawks and when the Hawks were good, they also got knocked out a lot by LeBron James. So their track record against LeBron, I think Casey actually has one more win against LeBron than Bud does, but both are very not good against LeBron in the playoffs. But more, do you think Bud would be the right guy to get this Raptors team, assuming they keep everyone together? Do you think that's the push they're going to need to get past LeBron?
I mean, no, because LeBron is LeBron. But I will say this. Bud is... I mean, I think we are in agreement of this. Bud is the best coach out there available at this point in time.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. So for him, I think he should only consider two teams. Toronto and Milwaukee. Mm. Really. Because they're sort of there. I mean, Milwaukee underperformed, but with Bud in there and with the talent level that they have, like, they would climb the ranks immediately. Mm-hmm. Toronto is a little bit more established, as we saw. Mm-hmm. And it would make sense for Toronto to go to swing for the fences and go for Bud, because, I mean, look, this year they incorporated a free-flowing style where the ball was moving and the defense was connected and more threes, more off-ball movement, cutting, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. the ball just swung more. Everything happened a lot more. There was more depth. And that's just Butt, man. I mean, that's the way Butt plays. That's what he likes. Like, the ball has to move. He has to get help from the bench. I mean, he relies on the bench, I should say. So, yeah, I mean, he would come into a system where, well, it's just been newly established this year, but he will come into a system where the players have been acclimated for a year in terms of, oh, let's be heavy on the ball movement, mm-hmm. which I think is a wildly attractive for him.
Yeah. I mean, so I wrote kind of a postmortem about the Raptors and Casey for B-Ball Breakdown, which you can find on my Twitter account on clutchpoints.com as well. I discussed the Bud situation in some detail as well, just because it seems like that's the route they're going. And, you know, we discussed in the last episode how after the 2017 sweep, Masai Ujiri called for the culture reset. Dwayne Casey answered the bell. He got more ball movement, more three-point shooting, more... The offense just became more egalitarian, less isolation-heavy. Right. That's Mike Budenholzer's system. That's what he ran in Atlanta. The Hawks were among the top 10 league-wide in passes per game in each of his five seasons with the Hawks, which is what Ujiri wants. They were... NBA.com only goes back 3 years in terms of that play tracking, but they were 25th, 25th, and 23rd, respectively, in their percentage of isolation possessions. So again, you know, the one-on-one ball that Ujiri specifically highlighted, that's not going to be an issue with Bud. So I think that's going to make him attractive to Ujiri. I would assume that's probably one of the main things that makes him attractive, along with, you know, his... I haven't heard anything bad about his rapport with players. Like, there hasn't been anything like the David Fizdale, you want LeBron James, or you want Greg Popovich, I want LeBron James breakdown with Marc Gasol.
Oh, with Bud?
Yeah.
No. Like, he used to play in Denmark, so he's civil.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of it's going to come down, whoever they hire, whether it's Bud or someone internally or, you know, another external candidate, a lot of coaching comes down to relationships and how much you can get Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan and the rest of the supporting cast to buy into your system. You know, that said, I think Bud's X's and O's savvy is up there as well. So I think, you know, I pose you the question, is Mike Budenholzer alone going to get past LeBron James? Probably not. Like, this Raptors roster might be fatally flawed despite their regular season success this year. Mm-hmm. But if you're going in the direction of this ball movement, three-point heavy, you know, share the wealth type of offense, and you needed a change at the top, Bud can continue that, implement his own system, but like, those will be the bedrocks, and then you're going to give this one more chance, basically. Like,
yeah,
you know, now I think the question for Toronto is, all right, you fired the coach, what's next? Are you going to, like, is this the time you're going to start taking a sledgehammer to this team? Or are you going to give this team, you know, it did have a 59-win season. Are you going to give them one more chance with a new leader before you just say, you know what, this isn't going to work?
You have to give it a year unless, I mean, you can tweak something initially. Like I mentioned on the podcast previously, in the episode before, that DeMar could be on the trading block if you get a new coach in who prefers ball movement. Because DeMar is really the only one who... It's unfair to say that he stops ball movement. He doesn't, but in the playoffs he did for his own sake. Like, he stopped for his own benefit, really. He kind of tried to isolate himself and tried to do a little bit more than he should have done, so he killed ball movement. His intentions were good. I don't think of DeMar DeRozan as a guy who is overly selfish and wants to take all these shots. I just think he has this idea that, oh, I can be a difference maker, so I need to establish myself. I need to assert myself. And then that, at times, just suffers through him just stopping the entire flow of the offense. Mm-hmm. So you could argue that Bud would sit down and talk to him and go, you know, would you be better off at a better place? Like, mutually agree, like, okay, should we continue this partnership wherein you do exactly as I say? Mm-hmm. Or would you want to move on to a place where you can be the man and not have a coach riding you for not passing the ball more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly possible, and we discussed this briefly in the last episode as well about, you know, maybe you just talk to another team that had a disappointing end to their season, call up Portland and say, you know, DeMar DeRozan, like, structure a deal around DeMar DeRozan for CJ McCollum. Or you call Washington and you say, look, it's no secret John Wall and Bradley Beal don't get along. Let's find a deal for John Wall and Kyle Lowry, or Bradley Beal and DeMar DeRozan. Let's try to make something work. Hey, Minnesota, we hear some, there's a lot of dysfunction in your organization. Jimmy Butler is a free agent in a year. Let's try to find a right. deal structured around DeMar DeRozan and Jimmy Butler. You know, obviously there would need to be extra pieces for in any of those trades. I'm not saying straight up one-on-one for any of them, but structuring a deal around those guys is a possibility, I guess. But Mort, I'm with you. I think they give this team one more chance with a new leader. Maybe if at the trade deadline, if they realize they're just, you know, going up against, like, if I mean, Boston's going to be really effing good next year.
Yeah.
You know, assuming health. We don't know where LeBron's going to be, but hypothetically, say he's on the Sixers, like, the Raptors would be the third best team in the East. Well, I'm just saying, you know, like,
yeah.
No matter what, like, regardless of what happens with LeBron, the Raptors are going to be behind the Celtics next year. If LeBron stays in Cleveland, I think at least in the regular season, the Raptors will stay ahead of Cleveland. The Raptors will be the second best team in the East. LeBron does go to Philly, the ceiling for the Raptors is the number three seed, or like the third best team. So
right.
You know, depending on what happens, maybe you hit that February trade deadline and you're like, you know what? We're screwed. there's just no way we're going to win a ring this year, or like even make it past the second round. Now we need to reevaluate. But I would assume the main pieces are all going to be back, at least to start the year. And part of that is just because that's the way their contracts are structured. Like, basically the entire Raptors roster is under contract for next season, with the exception of Fred VanVleet and Bebe Noguera, who are both restricted free agents, but everyone else is already signed. After next season, Jonas Valanciunas and CJ Miles both have player options for 2019-2020. At that point, Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka will be expiring contracts, and DeMar DeRozan has a $27.7 million player option for the 2020-2021 season. We don't know what he's going to do with that, but presumably he would decline it just because the cap's going to be so much higher by that point. He's probably going to be able to find a starting salary higher than that. So there's a very, like, you could start to see a hard reset in 2019. And come 2020, I mean, unless DeMar opts in, the highest paid player still on the books is Jakob Poeltl, and he would be a restricted free agent. Like, you can very easily, you know, or I guess actually Norman Powell will still be there as well. But like, if this core doesn't work, it's got at most a 2-year window. If it doesn't work in 2 years, you could kick everyone to the curb and, you know, easily reset. But even next season, you know, or after next season, you could say, all right, give me whatever you can for Kyle Lowry's expiring contract.
Right. And it's not insignificant to be, you know, part of the playoff discussion in Toronto, because it's the only team in Canada. Like, they build some pretty solid, like, long-term fan relationships with people over there when they make the playoffs and they're competitive. I want to go back to the Bradley Beal thing. Because, you know, under normal circumstances, everyone would be, are you kidding me? Like, John Wall and DeMar DeRozan, that would be, that would just be Brick City. But then I kind of remember that the Wizards general manager is Ernie Grunfeld.
So, right.
I mean, I would probably try to explore that as soon as I can.
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry and Bradley Beal. I mean, I honestly feel a change in dynamic, just going away from one of the most secure things that Toronto has had for so long, would maybe undo that mental control LeBron has over the entire team.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these organizations, not only Toronto, but a Portland, a Washington, a Miami, they're all going to have this, like, this question of confidence this summer of, like, can we run back the same core and realistically expect different results? And I don't know that the answer is yes, because like all of those teams are capped out. You're maybe, you know, maybe you get someone on the mid-level exception who makes a difference. Maybe you hit right. home on a draft pick, but like barring a major shakeup in terms of trades, like none of those teams have cap space to make major additions. Like this is who they are. And if, you know, the Heat, Blazers and Wizards all got knocked out in the first round, the Raptors got swept in the second round. Mm. Like if you're cool with that, you know, you brought it up, like a 59 win season and a second round playoff berth, that's not insignificant. Like most teams would be very happy to do that. Like the Minnesota Timberwolves would be, you know, prior to this season, would have been ecstatic with that. They'd missed the playoffs for 13 straight seasons. Like the Sacramento Kings would jump through flaming hoops to get to a 59 win season. So I understand the, you know, should they blow it up conversation. I understand like Raptors fans being admittedly bummed, but you know, before Casey got fired, he said something, and, you know, it got roundly, like, not even mocked. It was just like, oh, poor Raptors. He said, and I'm quoting this from Sirat Zoe of SB Nation. He said, there's a huge gap I think we closed between the first 4-0 in reference to the 2017 sweep and the second 4-0. That 4-0 is very, I think, deceiving. You had two games by what? 1 and 2 points, so the gap is closing. And he's right. Like, Toronto had a real chance to win that game at the end of game one. They missed, like, 3 or 4 tip-ins in the final second. You know, LeBron hits a ridiculous fadeaway running floater off the backboard to beat the buzzer in game three. Otherwise, they go to overtime, and who knows what happens then. So they aren't that far off. Now, that said, Boston, again, is going to be much better next season. So measuring yourself against what happened this year, you need to look ahead and say like, oh shit, like Boston's gonna be, you know, Boston's gonna be up there mentioned with the Warriors and the Rockets in terms of like these teams are legitimate title threats.
Yeah.
So, you know, as the Raptors are gonna have to have some like real honest conversations with themselves this summer and say, what can we do to get to that level? But they're not that far off. And I think, you know, maybe it is just going to take a new voice in that, like, with all due respect to Dwayne Casey, he deserves all the credit in the world for being so amenable to changing his system as dramatically as he did. But maybe just having another guy in there in Bud, maybe that does make a difference. And if not,
I think it would.
Yeah. And if not, you just hit reset in a year or two. And,
yep.
You know, like the problem for the Raptors, if you try to tank or blow it up, like they have too much talent. You can't tank with that much talent.
Nope. No, you end up in the middle of the road.
Right. And the good thing for the Raptors, before we move on, is, you know, a lot of these teams built around a big three or, you know, teams that are like at the end of the line of their current cores, they piss away so many draft picks and so much young talent that like the alternative is literally a multi-year rebuild. The Raptors, to Ujiri's credit and to their coaching staff's credit and their player development staff, like they have a bunch of young guys who you could see something's there. Like DeLon Wright, OG, Fred VanVleet, who we don't know if they're going to be able to retain him because, you know, they have $126.2 million in guaranteed salary for next season. So they're already over the luxury tax threshold. I would think they would love to bring Fred VanVleet back. Is just like how much, if he gets a much better offer sheet somewhere else, because they would have to pay, you know, effectively double or like 2.5 times as much as that just to bring him back. But Pascal Siakam, like they have a bunch of young guys who could turn into this, like the next iteration of this Raptors team. So even though it, like, I get Raptors fans being bummed as all hell right now because the expectations were so high, but like you are so much less screwed than, you know, what the Clippers were prior to the Blake Griffin trade. Or, like, what the Heat were after LeBron left. Like, you have a bunch of young guys. You don't need to necessarily go through a multi-year rebuild whenever this Lowry-DeRozan core expires. Like, you're probably going to get something of value for those guys. Maybe not fair value, but you know, some sort of draft pick and or young player, and like you can add that to your core. Like I still think the future is bright in Toronto, but I understand, you know, how it ended would understandably leave a very bitter taste in your mouth, which is, that's fair.
Did you just cover Toronto all by yourself?
I might have. So I'm going to let you do the honors on the next
one. I think you said it. I don't really have anything else to add. I mean, no, you pretty much went all over there, Brian. Yeah, no, I agree entirely. I mean, I can only reiterate what you just said. I mean, blowing it up for no other reason than to blow it up for a PR thing would just be dumb. I mean, again, this was a near 60-win team. Those teams don't grow on trees. And yeah, even though LeBron has some sort of Jedi stranglehold on them, that shouldn't preclude them from being a great regular season team and also making some noise in the playoffs. And that's worth something. It's mm-hmm. not worth everything, but it's worth something.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jonas Valanciunas is 25. Thon Wright is 25. Pascal Siakam, 23. Van Vliet, if they hang on to him, 23. Jakob Poeltl, 22. I mean, there are some youngsters there that are still very much playable in the long run. They might not turn into stars, but then you have like sort of a Miami Heat situation on your hands where you have a lot of talent that's complementary. Mm-hmm. And then if you get out of the hands of DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka's deals, well, then you can go find something else.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily think that you need to hit the big red button here.
Yeah,
like if you go into a retooling process, like that's different. I mm-hmm. could understand that. Like if you break off some pieces and try to get something else that just changes the dynamic, like that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But blowing it up, that takes some planning.
Yeah. Yep. I completely agree.
Hey everybody, this is Brian from the Glue Guys Nets show on Almighty Baller. Just wanted to talk to you about sponsor and friend of the network, HelloFresh. So I've had a few meal kit delivery services in my day. I, for one, am very excited to be having HelloFresh as a sponsor. So I am a kind of a deadbeat and a pretty disorganized person in my life. And one thing that I very much appreciate about HelloFresh's business was I had left town for a while they were delivering the package. And I came home 2 days later after it had been delivered and discovered that it was perfectly preserved. Nothing wrong. 2 days in a New York City, insanely hot October for some reason, and it was perfectly preserved. My produce was fine. My meats were fine. Everything was totally fine. Lots of ice packages all over the place, really closely wrapped. I very much appreciated the fact that I wasn't going to have to let my HelloFresh packages go to waste. That felt really good to me. Also, an important thing to note, while I am a deadbeat in some ways, I'm not in others. I do actually do a fair amount of cooking. And I really appreciate HelloFresh for this reason, too. Sometimes you get these, you know, delivery services, and you get all these kinds of off-brand things in the package. It's none of it's really what you're used to. I got King's Hawaiian Rolls with my burgers this time. Like, the brand, the actual thing. And it was such a breath of fresh air to see a brand that I was very familiar with, liked a lot, coming inside the package. And it made all the difference for my Juicy Lucy burgers that I whipped up. So all that's to say, HelloFresh is easily my favorite of the services. Tons of choices. You got classic style, family style, even vegetarian meals. Lots of benefits to subscribing. You can get delicious, filling meals delivered right to your door every week for less than $10 per serving and free shipping. So for a total of $60 off, that's $20 off your first three boxes, visit HelloFresh.com/Almighty60 and enter Almighty60. That's HelloFresh.com/Almighty60, Almighty60, and enter Almighty60. It's like receiving six meals free or up to 50% off three boxes.
All right, Mort, we got to talk about the Sixers.
And I think, my God, you just spoke for 18 minutes. Now you're going to speak for 35.
Well, I'm going to let you run with this first question because I think it's... As a Sixers fan, there are two ways to look at the season. One is going into the year, you know, I did not pick the Sixers to make the playoffs. I thought they were going to be the number 9 in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, you didn't? I didn't remember that. You didn't?
Yeah, I picked Charlotte as 7 and the Pistons as 8 because I'm an idiot. Well, because, you know, my whole thing was, if you guarantee me Joel Embiid plays 50 games at 25 minutes a game,
they're
making the playoffs. You know, you just didn't know. He had 31 games through three seasons. You couldn't be sure. And he was coming in with restrictions on back-to-backs. He still couldn't play back-to-backs.
So you just didn't know. Simmons was a question mark, honestly.
Right, yeah. Ben Simmons didn't play at all his rookie season.
Right.
Markelle Fultz, you know, even in preseason, you could tell something was up with the shot form. I wouldn't have assumed he was going to miss 68 games, but there were red flags there as well. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of new pieces. You had J.J. Redick in, you had Amir Johnson in. The bench was pretty thin, and that was really their shortcoming for a long time. But so on one hand, if you tell me at the beginning of this season they're going to win 52 games, get the number three seed in the East, win a playoff series, go on a 16-game winning streak to end the regular season, you know, and Embiid and Simmons are going to look as good as they do, Dario Saric is going to take the steps he did as a three-point shooter, I'd say this is an overwhelming success. I don't care how it ends. Then you look at, well, you know, maybe our expectations were just too high coming out of that Miami series, but it feels like they let that Celtics series slip away. Like, they could have and arguably should have won that series, but they just didn't execute, especially in late game situations. They got, I think I said this an episode or two ago, but they got outscored by 25.3 points per 100 possessions in crunch time, which was games 2, 3, and 5, which is abysmal. That was the worst team. That was the worst by far of any team in the conference semifinals. So there's a bitter taste in your mouth from how the season ended. So what would you grade this Sixers season as?
Oh, I hadn't thought about a grade, but I mean, in A minus, because I think an A minus is fair.
Yeah.
Because they moved a little bit further, and we talked about when they made it to the playoffs that whatever they win, it be that one game, be that one series, be it the whole damn thing, everything was just cream.
Mm-hmm.
After just making it, like, that's just an additional luxury to it. And to their credit, they made the second round, and well, they got their asses handed to them by Boston. But that's part of the process. I mean, look, the process is not the process without some hurt and some damage. And look, they stepped up. Joel Embiid played 63 games and averaged over 30 minutes a game. That's that alone is a victory in itself.
Yep.
Ben Simmons playing the way that he did was outstanding. Robert Covington, I seem to recall him having a somewhat slow start to the year, but, you know, catching up and finding the rhythm. J.J. Redick was J.J. Redick right off the bat. I was actually pretty nervous about J.J. coming in. I thought he had, like, a pretty fantastic dynamic with Chris Paul and that whole set, and Blake Griffin, that whole setup in L.A., and I was sort of frightened that he would come in to Philly and be, you know, kind of washed up J.J. Redick.
And he was sensational.
Like, yeah, I think he actually averaged a career high.
Yeah, he did.
Yep, he did. Certainly he did. So that's all of the things, all these components came together, and then some things didn't, which you were heavily reliant on, like Fultz.
Yep.
And they still did what they had to do. Also, I was kind of disappointed that, you know, Luvawu didn't really step it up in the way that he should have, given it was his second year, but... Mm-hmm. So there were some things where you looked at it and went, like, if you told me before the season, oh, you know, Fultz is only going to play 14 games, TLC is not going to do a whole lot, and we just signed J.T. Redick to be, like, a major core piece, I would probably be like, well, yeah.
Right.
And then you make it to the second round of the playoffs. So, yeah, that's an A-minus right there. But, like, it's so hard to grade this team because you're not looking at them now. You're looking 3 or 4 years down the line. Mm-hmm. So when you're grading them now, you're not grading them for the current product. You're grading them for partly what they'll become.
Yeah, right. Like, the hope is that this year's Sixers are basically the equivalent to the 2009-2010 Oklahoma City Thunder, who took a big step forward, put up a hard-fought series. They lost in the first round. Then the next year they come back, improve significantly, make it to the Western Conference Finals, then make it to the NBA Finals the year after that. Like, there should be a steady progression, and you can see that. Like,
yeah.
So let's go right into their offseason, because
Well, I think I have a better way of phrasing this, Brian, by the way.
Okay.
This Sixers team needs to be the worst Sixers team over the next 10 years.
Yeah. And Brian Colangelo, in his exit interview, said that. He's like, this is the worst our guys are going to play in the playoffs. So you're Brian Colangelo now. Congratulations.
I am, in that case, I am considerably more handsome than I used to be, so I'll take that.
You have two Executive of the Year awards, so that's
pretty much that going. And I wear awesome shirts, so that's fine. Right. Yeah.
Your collar is always pop, you're good.
It's always pop, like, to the point where it's cutting my ears off.
Yeah, but he did say something a lot of those. Like, and it's, you know, you look throughout NBA history, and J.J. Redick said this afterward, like, you often need these experiences of falling short to realize, like, where are my weaknesses? How can teams exploit me? And I'm glad the Boston series ended the way it did. Like, I would much rather, at least right now, for this Sixers team to get too confident and blow a series and, like, think they were too good and then realize, like, they got humbled. Like, so now, you know, Ben Simmons is going to go into the summer and be like, man, they completely sold out on me because I don't shoot jump shots. And I'm not saying Ben Simmons is going to come back and be a 40% 3-point shooter next year. But one of the big things they said in his after, you know, his exit interview is like, you need to work on your jumper. You need to be willing to pull at least from mid range because that's going to open up everything else for you. And it's going to make the game so much easier for you. Joel Embiid, you need to become more careful with the ball. You average way too many turnovers. You need to continue refining your post game. Like, you're already damn near unstoppable down there if you don't turn the ball over. But you need to be more aggressive. You need to just have a better plan of attack. Markelle Fultz, you just need to get your shot back. You need to get your confidence back. Like, all of these guys have so much room for growth. And that's what Brett Brown, like, continued to say over and over throughout the playoffs. Right. Like, we just have so much room to grow, and they do. But, like, this summer is going to be really big for these guys. Like, do they take advantage? Do they come back and have either a new skill in their toolbox or a more refined skill set? If they do, the sky's the limit for them. If they don't, then
it's the Gary Payton school of thought. Gary Payton had this thing when he started out in the league. He said he every year he came back from summer, he wanted to add something to his game. So it became a mid-range jump shot. Then it became a post game. Then it became a three-point jump shot. Then it became, I think he wanted to draw more fouls. I don't know if it resulted in more free throws, but he wanted to be more aggressive in getting people to reach in. So he started, like, developing hesitation moves and stuff like that. Like, every year he came back with something that would just keep defenders on their toes. So even though he was, like, a 7-year veteran, like, you couldn't actually guess what he'd do because he would have developed something entirely new that he didn't do before. That mentality, even though that's from, like, what, the early 90s, late 80s, that's still applicable today, and that's going to be applicable for the next 50 to 100 years.
Yeah.
You just, those summers need to be there. And I have a question for you. Should I take Ben Simmons' free throw shooting in the playoffs seriously? Because he shot almost 71%. He actually shot 0.2% better, or 0.02% better than Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of impressed by.
Yeah.
Should I take it seriously, or what?
I mean, I hope so. I honestly don't know. I mean, he shot better against Miami, it felt like, than he did against Boston. So I don't know if that's a psychological thing. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a career 56% shooter from the free throw.
Me neither.
I also don't think he's going to be a career 90% shooter, but you're right. Like, if he goes up from 56 to the low to mid 70s, and that was another area, I think, when they were when Brett Brown was discussing, like, the areas specifically for Simmons, it was your jump shot, free throw shooting, and finishing around the rim. You focus on those three things, we're in business.
All right. The reason I mentioned this, last podcast, you had a pretty long segment where you wanted to say, hey, let's not crown Brad Stevens yet.
Yeah.
you'll have to allow me to say the same about Ben Simmons here.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
When on Twitter, we see a lot of these, oh, Ben Simmons is going to be a future Hall of Famer, yada, yada, yada.
Right, like, he's the next Magic Johnson.
Right. I get it. I get where it's coming from. Like, the core of the argument, I get where it's coming from.
Right.
But let's just recognize something here. If he does not improve that free throw stroke, if he does not improve his ability to shoot mid-range jumpers and down the line three-pointers, which are going to be a necessity, a damn outright necessity, then that puts a significant cap on his potential. Like, he's already good. Like, he's already all-star caliber good. But if he doesn't develop those aspects, like, he's going to be guarded a lot more smartly by other teams.
Right.
He won't be able to get any sort of separation between himself and the defender. He is going to be one of those guys who's then going to level off nice and slow for 4 or 5 years until you look at him and go, oh, that's not good.
Right.
So again, I'm not saying he's not going to develop those things, like those aspects. Obviously, I also think it's really, really important for him, and I get it. Like, post games are not efficient, but I think he needs it. I think he needs a post game because he's 6'10", he's athletic as hell, and he is going to get matched up against smaller players on time to time, and I want him to punish them.
Yeah.
To be fair, sometimes he already does at his age, but I want him to be more refined.
Yeah.
What I don't want to see is him taking 17-foot fadeaway turnaround jump shots that looks like he's actually, you know, throwing a brick shooting a shot. So things need to come more smoothly to him. I'm confident that it will. And here's the kicker for me, or here's the one thing. We talked about Minnesota on the last pod.
No, we didn't.
We talked about Minnesota between podcasts because we recorded this podcast and the last podcast on the same evening. What we talked about was Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. Number one picks, having, like, expected, oh, greatness will be bestowed upon me.
Right.
To the point where I don't necessarily have to put in all the work.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that Ben Simmons is made of that same cloth. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that there's a certain risk in there wherein all this hype has gotten him to a point where he's thinking, oh, it's inevitable. I'll reach that point. To the point where you have to wonder, does he put in enough work? Again, I'm not questioning his work ethic. I am getting nervous about the hype level because I know he's a young man. He's 21 years old.
Yeah.
Young men listen to their own hype. That's a fact.
Right.
And I just want everything to just be silenced just a little bit around him. Just don't hype everyone up too much. Just let them grow.
Yeah.
They're not perfect.
I mean, again, that's why I'm happy the Boston series went as it did. Like, the fact they could so easily scheme him out just because he can't shoot a jumper, like, that should be a big slice of humble pie. After the Miami series, he was dominant. And, the hype was out of control. You're totally right. The thing that encourages me about his development is, one, he at least has a relationship with LeBron James, who has gone through a lot of these same questions earlier in his career.
You know, absolutely agree.
Not you know, LeBron was never as reluctant as Ben Simmons was this year to fire jumpers, but LeBron's confidence in his jump shot in year 15 is so much exponentially higher than it was earlier in his career, and he's much better at shooting those shots. So I think having that relationship, being able to tap into that, is going to be, you know, invaluable. That said, I mean, yeah, it's on Ben. Like, I said it before, it's a big summer for all of these guys. But then, you know, the Sixers, will find out on Tuesday whether they get the Lakers pick this year, but they are overwhelmingly likely to have a draft pick somewhere in the 10 to 11 range. They also have $25 million in cap space. You know, we'll find out exactly how much after the lottery, and then if Embiid is first team All-NBA or wins Defensive Player of the Year, his extension goes up. So that's actually a really big... it's going to be a big
decision. Oh, so you're on team... Don't let
Embiid I'm on team win. Brow. I'm on team... Yeah. No, like, I love Embiid, but, like, you know, if you're dreaming... If you're a Sixers fan dreaming of signing Paul George, signing LeBron James, you should be team Embiid for second team all NBA. Because you can get to, like, for if Paul George, you can get to the $30.3 million you need for him just by waiving, like, stretching Jared Bayless's contract.
Right.
LeBron, it takes a little bit more. You have to trade Bayless, package it with something, whether it's the number 10 pick, Justin Anderson, a couple of their young guys, you know, whatever. However you can make grease the wheels to get someone to take Bayless without taking or sending a salary back. But there are ways for them to get there. So more, we'll talk a lot about the Sixers and their free agent stuff, you know, as we get closer and as we start to hear some rumblings. But if you were Brian Colangelo, since you assumed his identity 10 minutes ago, what's your plan this offseason? Are you going all in on a guy like LeBron? Are you going all in on Paul George? Kawhi? What about Kawhi? A trade for Kawhi?
See, that's the thing, because in the trade, you have to give up something.
Yeah.
I'm not really crazy about that from Philly's perspective, because I know that there are a lot of young players on Philly. But as I alluded to previously, I mean, it's not all of them that so far been a slam dunk, and not all of them are going to turn into slam dunks, because that's the philosophy that was driven with the Sixers. I mean, that's the more attempts at a difference maker, you know, the better.
Right. More bites of the apple.
Right, exactly, because then you can allow yourself to miss on a few picks. I mean, that happens.
Yeah.
So I think instead of going all out for Kawhi, even though I think he would fit like a glove into that system, so would Paul George. He's just the lesser of Kawhi.
Yeah.
And if you can sign Paul George outright without giving up a pick and without having to trade for him or whatever, yeah, you do that. Like, he shoots off the ball, he rebounds, he playmakes. He's a 6'9", 6'10 wing who can theoretically play the 2, the 3, and the 4. He can handle, he can defend. Like, he's everything you want in a two-way player. And because there's the presence of Embiid, because there's the presence of Ben Simmons, because there's the presence of potentially Markelle Fultz, and because there is the presence of Dario Saric, you know, Paul George could see himself like in the MVP conversation just off of efficiency alone. Like, this dude could end up having like an efficiency that nears, you know, 70% of the true shooting percentage column.
Yeah, I've been team Paul George for a long time, and I was even team Paul George over LeBron for a while. I think I've moved back to team LeBron over Paul George just because the playoffs have been a nice reminder of what LeBron James does.
But I get that, by the way. I mean, I get that you still have to kill the giant.
Yeah.
Unless you get him on your team.
Right, and that, you know, I look at that. This Boston team now, and you see, you know, they're going to add Kyrie and Hayward back, and they're already in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, you might need LeBron James to get past them. So, yeah, I mean, the point is, and again, we'll discuss the Sixers a lot in the coming months, so we don't need to hammer it home now, but Brian Colangelo, in his exit interview with the media, used the term optionality a lot. And he made it clear, like, if the right deal's not here this year, they're going to push it back till next year when a guy like Kawhi Leonard might be on the market. A guy like Jimmy Butler or Klay Thompson might be on the market. A guy like Chris Middleton, who would, you know, like Paul George, would fit like a glove in that, like, rich man's 3-and-D role. He's probably going to be on the market. So the Sixers have to make their splash free agent-wise in the next 2 years, because extension for Simmons is going to start in 2020. So their cap space, like, it just, it's gone in 2 years' time.
Should be this year. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it should be this year also for acclimation purposes.
Yeah.
Really, it needs to. And like, that core has to go forward now.
And there's also, I mean, I forget who at The Athletic reported this, but, you know, someone at The Athletic yesterday said Klay Thompson's already in negotiations for taking less to do an extension in Golden State. Like, there's no guarantee. I mean, yes, we can look down the line in 2019 and say all of these guys are going to be free agents, save your cap space, save your cap space. You don't know that Klay Thompson's going to be a free agent. You don't know that Kawhi Leonard's going to be a free agent. Jimmy Butler is most likely going to be a free agent, but Jimmy Butler is going to be close to 30 coming off a knee surgery, having played for Tibbs his entire career. Like, if LeBron James wants to come to Philly this year, if Paul George wants to come to Philly this year, you push your chips in. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But, I mean, again, you also have to figure out, or not figure out, that's the wrong term, but you have Embiid, you have Simmons, you have Fultz. These guys need to get floor time together. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you don't sign a guy this year. So you have these guys kind of getting familiar with one another. And then in 2019, you sign a high-volume guy. That could potentially just ruin the entire dynamic. But mm-hmm. if you get a guy in now, and then you add in Fultz, who, let's be honest, has not been a high-volume guy
right.
in his first year because he played 14 games, then you can sort of tailor his game around that established core. Let's say it's Paul George. Then the main core is Embiid, Paul George, and Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Fultz comes in and he's sort of having to play a complementary role to those three, and that's fine because then he doesn't need to develop into a guy who has the sustainability of averaging 25 a game.
Right. Yeah. I'm still very high on Fultz, and it sounds like Colangelo and Brett Brown are too, and Embiid in his interview just kept saying Fultz is a beast.
I don't doubt that.
Yeah, so they still consider him a big part of the organization, but Colangelo did say, like, he's not shooting at the level. He's still currently not shooting at the level he was back in college. So you're right. He's no matter how he looks behind the scenes, he could look like the second coming of Michael Jordan behind the scenes, but until we see it, we're not going to know, and until they see it in a game, we're not going to know. So
right.
There are a lot of questions with Philly. Like, the exciting thing is, you know, this is... obviously, it's like the biggest offseason they've had since I've been alive. Like, the range of outcomes is you are going to be in the NBA Finals next year. But then also, you know, as some people have been joking with me, is like, Brad Colangelo drafted DeMar DeRozan. What if he pushes all of his chips in and trades for DeMar DeRozan? Like, I don't think it's going to happen. But there's a wide range of outcomes from, you know, this season is the first of a promising step. Like the right direction, or this is as good as it's gonna get.
So Fultz,
DeRozan, Covington, Saric,
poor Covington. Covington would have to be the only spacer because Embiid's 3-point shot's still not there entirely. That's an underrated thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Embiid's 3-pointer it just needs to be tweaked a little bit. Those percentages, he's a little bit too trigger happy for it.
Yeah, I know. I hope the playoffs taught them all to value possessions more than they did. Let's move on more to the New Orleans Pelicans. They don't have as complicated a summer as the Sixers. They have one gigantic 6'10" question. DeMarcus Cousins is a free agent. He is coming off of a torn Achilles, which we've seen in the past has been... I don't want to say career-threatening because guys often do come back from it and continue to play. Career-altering is probably the word. Don't know,
I would say so,
how DeMarcus Cousins is going to look next year. Nope. The Pelicans played very well in his absence after acquiring Nikola Mirotic. They made it to the second round of the playoffs. They even stole a game off of the Warriors. If you're the Pelicans, what do you do with Boogie?
I re-sign him.
For how much and how long?
That's really the main issue here.
Yeah.
I would offer him a shorter term deal, and I wouldn't even care if it's pretty expensive.
Mm.
It would have to be.
Mm-hmm.
If he signs it, let me start out by saying this. I'm not going to max him out for full length.
Okay. Yeah.
No, 5-year max. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
No 5-year max. Not doing that.
Yeah.
I could offer him like 2-year, and if the third year could be like a team option or like a non-guaranteed, you know, maybe some sort of non-guaranteed clause in there in the third year, where you max him out for the 2 fully guaranteed year.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be fine, because if he proves his worth, or not proves his worth, that's wrong, but if he proves that he's healthy and he can contribute to a similar... to the similar level of production they could before, you know, I'm fine with that. I love that. I mm-hmm. move forward with that, and I create a very positive relationship with him, so he's ready to re-up with me once again after that deal is done. If he's like, okay, but he's not in completely the same level as before, but he's still tradable
mm-hmm.
because his deal is not for 5 years and the last year is not guaranteed, then I use him as a trade chip.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't throw away the potential of DeMarcus Cousins either as a player, neither as a player or as a trade object.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the Pelicans are in a position where they can just say, all right, bye. Like, we played well without right. you. We're not even going to bother trying to re-sign you. I'm with exactly. you that they shouldn't offer a five-year max. It's going to piss Boogie and his agents off that they don't. And Boogie and his agents might start shopping around and try to find a four-year max elsewhere. But as we've discussed many times, and as we'll say many times over the next month and a half, cap space just isn't there around the league. Like, very few teams outside of, I guess, Chicago probably could if they let LaVine go, which they're not going to do.
They're not going to do that, and yeah. it would be dumb to bring in a guy in his prime when they traded Jimmy in right. his prime. Like right. that would just not fly well.
So the Lakers are really the only other spot. Like, Philly will have, again, they could make cap space, but why are you pairing Boogie and Embiid? Like, it's not going to happen. So it's, you know, if the Lakers miss out on Paul George and LeBron and they're desperate, you know, they desperate to make a move and make a big free agent splash, maybe they do that. But even still, I think Rob Pelinka would know, you know, that's a hell of a risky move. So
yep.
it sucks. Like, it's really, because Boogie was going to, you know, realistically, if he didn't get hurt, he probably was going to get the 5 year max from New Orleans. But like that injury, he really might have to take a 2 or 3 year deal, like you said. I wouldn't be opposed about New Orleans giving him a 2 year deal with a 3rd year player option, because that's exactly what Anthony Davis has remaining on his contract. He signed guaranteed 2 more years. Oh yeah,
so they opt out, or so the out year is the same. No, yeah. I get that. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, if Cousins isn't his previous self, then he's probably gonna opt in, and
right.
then you know Drew Holiday also, he's signed 1 more year than Davis, so he has a $27 million player option the year after Davis can come off the books. So either way, you're not committed like forever and ever. I mean, I think a 3 year deal with a 3rd year player option is the way to go. But yeah, like you, I think at this point, I mean, the other problem for the Pelicans is they already have $92.8 million in guaranteed salary on the books. If you give Boogie his full $30.3 million max, you are in the luxury tax with 8 players under contract. And the Pelicans don't strike me as a team that would be super excited to pay the tax. Now, maybe they try to shed Solomon Hill, maybe they try to shed Alexis Ajinta, but
yeah, how are they going to shed Solomon Hill
though? Right, exactly. And, you know, maybe they can give up draft picks, but like, you've been doing that. That's been your modus
operandi. That's just not a sustainable strategy.
Right.
It's not.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to build around Davis and a relatively young, you know, Holiday, Davis, and Cousins are all in their prime, sure, but, you know, you don't want to give away those guys. Like, I would assume Nico played well enough during the playoffs that he wouldn't be, like, it'd be pretty easy to move him, I would think, but right. I don't think you want to. I think what he showed next to Davis in those couple months, you want to retain him if you're New Orleans. But then, you know, a guy like Rajon Rondo, who played really damn well, he's an unrestricted free agent. Ian Clark, who had some flashes, especially in the playoffs and toward the end of the regular season, he's an unrestricted free agent. So keeping this team together is going to get pretty costly if they do retain Boogie. You know, for us, who gives a shit? Like, it's not our money, but you know, it's still a consideration when, you know, we don't know how willing New Orleans is to pay the tax, how far above the tax line they'd be willing to go. It's going to make for a really fascinating summer.
Yeah. I mean, overall, it's just about flexibility in regards to Boogie, really. I mean, if he yeah, if he signs for like 2 years or 3 years, and it just goes, you know, where he plays decently, but it just, the fit isn't there. Like, you realize that Davis alone is just the superior, you know, the superior option.
Mm-hmm.
You can always flip Boogie. It's like Washington. Mm-hmm. For Jan Mahimi, who will have a year less on his deal.
True.
And a pick or something like that.
Yeah.
So there are ways to get out of it, because a team like Washington, and there are several teams like Washington,
mm-hmm.
they have, you know, large dead contracts on their books,
mm-hmm.
which will always be available for a player of Bookie's caliber, even if that caliber is not typical Bookie, but close to peak Bookie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point.
He's going to, unless, you know, his career is just going to be completely altered, he's going to come back and struggle to play 20 minutes a game,
mm-hmm.
then we're in a situation where that's not looking good.
Right. But, I mean, luckily, having Nico there, they don't have, like, they can re-sign Boogie, and they don't have incentive to rush him back. Like, they don't need him back by opening
night.
That's
true.
They can let him recover at his own pace. And, you know, say take your time. Like, the last thing we want is for you to do lasting damage to your career. This is a very serious injury.
But this is the Achilles tear, though. So, yeah. I mean, even if you let it rest for an additional few months, like, you've lost something.
Yeah. Oh, right. I mean, either way, he's going to be affected. But, like, letting him ease his way back in rather than like throwing him back for 35 minutes on
opening night. No, we agree on that. But yeah. I think those 35 minutes, I think that's done with. I have a feeling he's never going to crack 32 minutes a game again.
It sucks. I mean, I don't necessarily think you're wrong. It's just...
Absolutely. So it is. Oh. But I mean, look, he's 6'11", he's listed at 270, but let's be real, he's more like 285.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he would have to take the Duncan route. Like, slim down 20 pounds
mm-hmm.
and maybe be more of a finesse player. But the way that he banks in the post and the amount of punishment his body takes.
Right.
Like, he has people on him. Like, he's carrying people on his shoulders at times.
Yeah.
Just putting so much weight down on those feet. I mean, I wouldn't. It's not necessarily a bad thing that he would play around, you know, 30 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you can still put up a lot of numbers in 30 minutes, especially if you're DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, there's a cap on the minutes, I think. And whether that's going to change the opinion of, you know, New Orleans, if they find that to be true, that, oh, he's going to be limited from here on out, I would still re-sign him.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, it's much like what we advocated for Blake Griffin last summer. And look what happened. You know, the Clippers did re-sign him, traded him 6 months later, got a pretty decent haul in return. And now they're...
But we didn't agree with the amount, though, with Blake.
Oh, no. We did not.
Or the length. Yeah. I'm sorry, the length. No, the length of a contract.
No, we did not say to give him a five-year max.
Yeah. So, no, but you're right. He was name-aid.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. So before we move on from New Orleans, I'd say their other big concern, which got exposed against the Warriors, you know, it was obvious the whole year. They had probably the worst wing rotation in the league. Again, if they re-sign Boogie, they're going to be in the tax already. How, if you're New Orleans, you don't have a first-round pick, you gave it up for Nico, how do you round out your wings?
That's a good question. I mean, this is where a pick would have come in handy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's a good answer to that. I mean, you're going to have to obviously go, like, bargain hunting and probably... Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if they're, you know, if you're in the tax already, are your owners going to be willing to use the taxpayer MLE? I don't know. Like, you might have to just literally shop for minimum guys. Now, Rondo played well off the, you know, on a small contract last year. If he's happy doing that again, I think you probably bring him back. But
yeah, you do.
But like, there, because of, I mean, really the Solomon Hill deal, even Etuan and Ajinja, like it's we've said it before, it's really hard to build around three guys on max deals. Mm-hmm. If they re-sign Cousins, they're going to be in that predicament. Even if not, I mean, they have $92.8 million in guaranteed salary. The cap's going to be $101 million. So, like, even if they let all of their guys go, They only have $8.5 million to round out their roster. And then they have the non-taxpayer mid-level, which is like $8.6 million in additional.
Jeff Green.
Yeah, I mean...
That's the type of player.
Right, exactly. They need to bring in. Yeah, no, I agree.
Lord knows they have shooting guards.
Yeah, indeed. All right, Moy, let's wrap things up now with the Utah Jazz. Do you want to take your final victory lap on Donovan Mitchell to close out his rookie season officially?
I don't need to, Brian.
You sure don't. I mean, look, the outlook for that team is, you know, outside of Golden State and Houston in the West, I don't know who in the Western Conference has a brighter outlook than the Utah Jazz right now because of Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert.
Yep.
That's
they,
it.
They need a three too.
Yeah,
they need a legit three too. Well,
so they do have, you know, they have a lot of their guys either under contract or they have a bunch of non-guaranteed contracts like Thabo Sefolosha, Jonas Jerebko, Ekpe Udo, Royce O'Neal, who I would assume they pick his option up already if they have not. Mm-hmm. You know, but they've got Gobert, Rubio, Joe Ingles, Alec Burks, Jay Crowder, Donovan Mitchell. All those guys are under contract already. So they're in good shape. Financially, they've only got $75 million in guaranteed money. So I would assume they, you know, we'll see what happens with their non-guaranteed guys. But I don't think they're going to go for a big free agent splash this year. They do have two of their own free agents they need to take care of, in theory, or at least address. First being Derek Favors. What do you do with him, Mort?
So the sign and trade seems to be a thing of the past.
Yeah, because it hard caps.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Derek Favors should be the long-term piece at the four.
Mm-hmm.
I know he plays a lot of backup five, so there's some luxury in having that size available.
Mm-hmm.
And he's by no stretch a bad player.
Right.
But this is the NBA in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to have a high-volume three-point shooter at least one of the two biggest positions on the floor, the four and the five.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not expecting Rudy Gobert to go out and hit 173s next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not. So Favors got a little bit better this year. He made 14 threes, but that was on 22%.
Mm-hmm.
He's primarily an inside guy. And that's not going to change. He's, 26? Now he's going to be 27 during free agency. So, yeah, it's kind of a pookie situation as well. Because if you lose him, you lose him for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get something in return for him. So I would nay-nay him.
Mm-hmm. Resign him.
I really would. And then resign him. But then comes the big one. Like, at what price?
Yeah.
Yeah. And because if you sign him for too much, you're not going to be able to nay-nay him.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, again, we'll say it. We'll keep hammering it home. Working in Utah's favor is money ain't going to be there for most of these guys. That said, right. You know, a team like, say, Dallas could have upward, I think, of like $20 million in space. Maybe, you know, if they decide this is Dirk's mm-hmm. last hurrah, we can't send him out on a 25-win team. Maybe they give Favors a look. Maybe a team like Phoenix or Sacramento sees him as like a veteran, you know, veteran leader slash still productive contributor, but just a guy to like...
Dallas thing is good, Brian, because I'm looking over that roster right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they desperately need a big man of Favors' caliber. That's a legit threat, actually. Like,
Nerlens was supposed to be that guy, but we all know how that turned out.
Let's not talk about Nerlens.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I mean, there won't be many places. I mean, again, the Lakers, possible if they strike out on their big guys. The Bulls, I guess. But
God, no, I don't think so. Not under Fred.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. But like Dallas does seem like a realistic possibility. So I'm with you. Yeah. I honestly don't know. I don't know what fair value for him is in this market. Like, I would you know, my brain is saying like 3 years, $40 million, but that seems, you know, if I'm his agent, I hang up immediately and go find something better. But that seems like something that would at least be tradable down the line, but still
rewarding. That's essentially, yeah, that's like, yeah, 3 years, $40 million. That's a little bit more than he's getting now. He's getting $12 million right now. I think that's actually a very fitting area for him.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, 3-40 would be around, it's a little less than $14 million a year. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's really, it's going to be...
But in that ballpark, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I between think so. 12 and 15.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. So the other question for them is Dante Exum, who is a restricted free agent, which benefits them. It's going to...
Mm-hmm.
You know, I he's missed so much time with injuries that it's going to be difficult for another team to invest heavily in him as their starting point guard and see, you know, say confidently, we can give you 4 years, $80 million, because we just,
right.
You know, you're a blank slate, basically. We just don't know. But that said, you know, he played really well toward the end of the regular season in the playoffs. He got hurt at the end with the hamstring. Which is basically like, that's the entire Dante Exum experience. The playoffs were just the Dante Exum experience encapsulated into like 10 games. So, you know, I think if you're Utah at that point, you're just saying, all right, Dante, get an offer sheet we can match, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Or get an offer sheet and then we'll decide whether to match or not. But like,
right.
If you're Utah, you're not, you're going to let the market set his price.
Right, and I don't think the market will look at his 235-minute sample size in the regular season for this year and go, oh, well, that's significantly better production than the first 2 years. Yeah, no,
right.
I don't think they're going to look at it that way. I mean, if someone does, Yuza will be, I think, fine not matching.
Yeah.
If he gets a sick offer sheet somewhere.
Right. Like, and also, there are so few teams. Orlando needs a point guard, but like, there are so few teams that need a point guard right now that's also going to work in Utah's favor. Like, who's going to float a $15 or $20 million per year offer sheet?
Right.
At a guy who has struggled to stay healthy. He's played, you know, 162 games over his 4 year career so far, but he missed the entire 2015-16 season and played only 14 games this season. Like, you know, he's
missed... Which is effectively two missed seasons,
right? Yeah. Like, slightly more than two missed seasons. He started zero games this year, 67 in total. Like, not a great shooter. I mean, his physical profile and what he did defensively against James Harden, I think that's going to intrigue some teams. I think he's basically like a better version, you know, of what Elfrid Payton is at this point.
Yep.
In theory, I mean, he just hasn't gotten the volume to show it, but like
he's bigger,
right? Yeah. Right, but he also struggles to shoot like Peyton. So, you know,
right.
Phoenix like has Peyton on the roster, so maybe they just decide to stick with him. But yeah, other than that, it's like it's Orlando or bust, basically, right? And who else needs a point guard right now?
No, that crop is pretty filled out.
I guess the Knicks, if they're really not sold on Frankie Smokes, but they, you know, they might, if they stay at number nine.
They have Moutier, and they're probably going to retain Trey Burke, right?
Or they can take Colin Sexton at number nine, too. I mean, we don't know.
Oh, yeah, like, there's a Trey Young and a Colin Sexton coming in as well in the picture. No. So.
And we don't know, trade-wise, I mean, there might be, you know, some team might trade their starting point guard and create an opening, but... Just saying, like, as where it stands right now in the middle of May, there just really aren't that many obvious fits for him.
Right. No, I mean, Utah might get lucky in the sense that he does simply not find any sort of offer sheet out there that's worth his time, and he just goes, all right, let's make a deal.
Yeah.
And right. Then it's like a 2 year deal, I don't know, worth $4 million a year to begin with or something like that. I mean, look. I know the people, $4 million a year for Dante Exum. The dude played 14 games.
Yeah.
He's played 80 games for the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I would not offer a significant amount of coin, long term at least.
Right.
Like, and theoretically, it doesn't matter if it's 2 years. Like, he could get $6 million a year. It doesn't matter. It's when it's a two-year deal, it's just, it's ridiculous to even talk about it. But I wouldn't give up a lot. I really wouldn't at this point. I'm just so nervous about his progression in terms of staying healthy and not being able to shoot. Like, defensively, I love the potential. He's also a pretty good passer, so there are definitely elements to him that are wildly intriguing, but not to the point where I'm shelling out major coin.
Right. I mean, like, if you're saying he only $4 million a year, you're pointing to where he was drafted. But 4 years into your NBA career, where you were drafted does not matter one bit. Like,
right, you look at the production.
Right. Like, Jahlil Okafor is going to struggle. He was the number three pick. He's going to struggle to get more than a minimum contract this summer, I would assume.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's...
No, you're right. You're right.
So, yeah, I mean, I understand, you know, coming into the league as the number five pick, he would have expected to get a lucrative offer this summer. Unfortunately, as you said, 80 games over the past two seasons... We just haven't been able to see the progression that we would like to from him. That's not to say it's not going to come. I mean, I'm still really high on the kid overall. I think he's going to be a really good player.
But he'd have to defy some odds, though.
Yeah. Yeah, we just don't know. I mean, he's still really young. He doesn't turn 23 until mid-July. So, like, still, you know, he's younger than Chris Dunn, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That's wild.
Oh, no. Hey, I have... Just wait for the offseason. I have Dunn comments. I have Bulls comments like coming out of my ears. Don't worry, I'll get to that point.
Oh boy, yeah. all right. Well, before we wrap up, just on Utah in general, do you think this team is going to contend for a top four seed next year?
Oh man, I mean that really depends on how things shake up in the West. Like what happens to Kawhi. Mm-hmm. Where does he end up? And, you know, what if LeBron joins a Western Conference? That's a question I can't answer yet. I will say this. Their trajectory is only going upwards.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell is going to single-handedly just put them up a notch and just raise their ceiling. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is pretty encouraging. But as I alluded to when we started talking about this team, like, they need a three.
Yeah.
Because Jay Crowder has been just not that good. Mm-hmm. Thabo Sefolosha is going to be retired within, 18 months anyway, I expect. Like, Royce O'Neal is fine, but he's also still not that battle-tested yet. He's still somewhat young, and he's got a capped ceiling, you can say.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel they really need, like, a wing to complement Mitchell.
Yeah.
I was toying around with that idea. I hadn't looked at the numbers at all, but if they could, you know, maneuver themselves into a position where they could talk to Paul George, I would love that. Like the Paul George, Donovan Mitchell duo in Utah. Man.
That would be nasty.
Yeah. That would be nasty. I don't think it's going to happen because Utah's just not been a free agent destination by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. And I just, I don't know how they make the numbers work, but.
Exactly. Right. I don't think they do. They would have to trade Joe Ingles, which would hurt every Jazz fan on the planet.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd move Alec Burks. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at it, but oh, that would have been fun. But they need a two-way, you know, small forward. Maybe they trade themselves into like Mikal Bridges territory in the draft in some capacity. No, but like he would be wonderful next to Mitchell.
He's got to be a Sixer. He can't play for both the Sixers and the Jazz. That's not possible, Mort. But yeah, you're right. I
love the fact that you want the Sixers to have like 97 million roster spots because you want everybody.
I know, I do. I think it's fair to say that it's too early just to tell whether this team is going to be, you know, like the third best team in the West, fourth best team. We got
to
see.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know what's going to happen to Derek Favors.
Yeah, right. And also, yeah, like the Kawhi stuff, Paul George, LeBron. You're totally right.
Kawhi. Yeah, Kawhi. Yeah. That he should go to the Jazz. That's right. Oh, there we go.
But overall, I mean, I think this team if Gobert hadn't gotten hurt this year, they would have been comfortably a top four seed, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, they're going to be, they're still a tier below Houston and Golden State until they can get one more piece, one more star piece around Gobert and Mitchell. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be right in that next tier of, like, you know, whoever comes out in that 3-4-5 range, they're going to be right in there. So, Jazz fans, I know, you know, the Hayward departure hurt last summer, but you should forget about it. Donovan Mitchell's a superstar, even if he's going to finish second in Rookie of the Year. Rudy Gobert is, you know, an incredible defensive force. He's going to be the Defensive Player of the Year. Like, you guys, a lot of teams would happily trade places with you guys right now. So,
oh yeah,
kudos on a good season. We're looking forward to seeing what comes next from the Jazz.
And so, one final note on Gobert, by the way.
Oh yeah,
like, yeah, he missed games, but he also had a down year. Like, statistically, he mm-hmm. wasn't as good as the year before, and I don't expect that trend to continue at all.
Yeah,
like next year, I have a feeling we're gonna see that improved offense we talked about last summer.
Oh man, that would be huge.
That would be huge. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Gobert came out next season and averaged like 17 points a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be big.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Until next time, though, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. We got a lot of good stuff coming this week. We got a lot of the draft stuff. The lottery is on Tuesday, so we'll have plenty of that. Conference finals coverage, so please be sure to follow us on Twitter there. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at AlmightyCasts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
Thank you, Brian. I will enjoy not reading Twitter, because I've noticed over the past 24 hours that a lot of people are legitimately asking, could Larry Bird play in this era? I'm out now.
Yeah, dude. NBA Twitter spirals so fast when there's no basketball. Please.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited for basketball to come back.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow. All right. Later, Mort.
Later.